Welcome to Men Alive, a biblical journey to help us conform to the image of Jesus Christ. I'm your teacher, Dr. Jim Cunningham, author of the book Men Alive. Normally, I am the teacher, but today, our host, my longtime friend, Paul Esterbrooks, is switching roles. Paul, what are you going to share?
Jim, today I've asked our mutual friend, Dr. Ron Boyd McMillan, to be our guest teacher. He will share with us an interesting presentation that he calls The Four Best Ways to Kill Your Church. Here's Dr. Ron.
I'm often asked the question, why is the church in the West not more persecuted? And my answer is, the church in the West doesn't need to be persecuted because it's doing a good enough job of killing itself. I once met a Polish history professor back in the days of the Cold War. He told me that he was once called in to see the Minister of the Interior. The minister said, I want you to write me a report that tells me how to kill the church in Poland. How do we neutralize Christianity as a force here? We're fed up having to share power with the church. And he added, think the unthinkable. I want all the options. The professor was given 6 months to write his report. Well, he got to work. The first thing that occurred to him was, well, why not just kill all the Christians? The minister did say, think the unthinkable. Killing all the Christians would solve the problem, would it not? But the professor began to research church history and discovered that this tactic had been tried before and it had never worked. The problem was, you killed a few Christians, but then the rest dived underground where you couldn't get at them anymore. And worse, Christianity originally was an underground religion. It doesn't just survive in the catacombs and the caves, it revives. So the professor discarded that tactic as counterproductive. Otherwise, the government would unwittingly revive the church, and the minister would not be pleased. So he began to puzzle over the question again. He scratched his head, but he couldn't come up with much. Later, he was visiting a famous university town in Britain, and he thought, why don't I go along to a church and see what I'm up against? He chose a church that had a remarkable history, where the giants of the English Reformation had thundered from the pulpit and changed a nation. He said, I went in with fear and trembling. What would I find? And would I come out realizing we could never hope to neutralize the church? Well, he came out with a huge smile on his face. Here's why. As he went in, someone thrust a dusty hymn book into his hands and mumbled something about not sitting in the left side of the church as the roof leaked there. The church was sparsely filled, with maybe 100 scattered around in a church that could have seated 1,000. An organ drowned everyone out during the hymns. No one sang out. A preacher read a dry, abstract sermon with all the passion of a dead fish. And at the end of the service, the people scuttled out of there like scalded mice, and no one met his gaze. As I said, the professor came out with a huge grin on his face. He said, I had the answer for the minister. We had been barking up the wrong tree. The point was not to destroy the church, but to keep it in such a form that no one would want to join it. Just like that church. Those Christians had managed to make Christianity so unattractive, so boring, so irrelevant, that no one would want to join in. And they had done it to themselves. They had killed the church, and they never even knew it. So the professor's question was, what had they managed to do naturally that he had to do deliberately so that he could get the same result, which was to keep the church but as a fossil, dry, dead, ossified, telling only a story of life past but not present or future? Well, I never got to see the professor's report, but it's no secret what he would write. For all of history, persecutors have had four main tactics in trying to drain the life out of the church. They mess with the message, they promote paralyzing people, they compromise the community, and they support a suffocating structure. This is why we need to turn to the persecuted church, because the tactics the persecutors use to drain them of life could very well be the same ones we use to drain ourselves of life. Wouldn't it be ironic if we killed our church and we never even knew it? So let's go through these four ways to kill the church. We'll see how the persecutor tries to do it, and then examine a possible contemporary parallel in our churches. First tactic, mess with the message. Persecuting governments don't try to stop the church. They try to control it. And usually they will add a little element into the gospel message, which subtly deprives it of its power. This element is not necessarily wrong. In fact, it's usually true. But it has the effect, the deadly effect, of quietly substituting for Christ. In China, for example, there is a Protestant state church. and the government said to the pastors, you must preach this message, love country, love God. Now, that doesn't sound so wrong. There's nothing wrong with loving one's country. But the danger is that the pastors ended up telling the people too much about what a great country they lived in, and not enough about what a great God they were worshipping. A subtle substitution had taken place, and the message had been messed with. Christ was no longer central. Remember, when we mess with the message, we're usually putting something good, something true, beside Christ. But it has the effect of knocking him off center, so that it is no longer Christ we preach.
You are listening to Men Alive, today with guest speaker Dr. Ron Boyd McMillan, sharing his presentation on the four best ways to kill your church. You can receive a free PDF copy of The Victorious Church and Family by sending Dr. Jim an email at menaliveuntogod@gmail.com. That's menaliveuntogod@gmail.com. Let's return now to Dr. Ron and hear three more ways you could kill your church.
The second tactic persecutors use to kill the church is to promote paralyzing people. The communist government of Russia were very clever. The Russian Orthodox Church was a state church, and so the government rigidly controlled the power of appointment. You would think they would put young, effective, clever, articulate, undercover communists in charge, but no, they were much smarter than that. They put very elderly men in charge, because due to their age, they could be guaranteed to be resistant to change. And with them in charge, the church would never be responsive to society. It would get more and more backward. And that's exactly what happened. The government never needed to bother themselves. They had promoted paralyzing people, and the church was paralyzed as a result. But what would be a contemporary parallel? Who do we promote in our churches that end up paralyzing us? Well, here's one suggestion. The superstar pastor. I once served an apprenticeship in a big megachurch under a famous pastor. People drove for half a day to hear him speak, and he was a brilliant preacher. But the more I saw of him, the more I realized that he was building the church around his personality, not Christ. He was a brand. He wrote books, he had a radio program, and when he wasn't preaching at the church, you could hear an audible groan from the congregation. And when he left the church, it collapsed. Why? Because the superstar pastor was a paralyzing person. He built the church around himself, not Christ. He couldn't empower others. He was too insecure, too threatened by people who could preach as well as he. He had to control everything, make all the decisions, do all the preaching. Everything depended on him, and that's the way he loved it. On the surface, it looked like a thriving church. Underneath, all that was holding the church together was not the love of Christ, but the adrenaline of the pastor. He had killed his own church, and he never even knew it. The third great tactic the persecutor uses to kill the church is to compromise the community. If you sow dissension, the church can't function as a caring, welcoming body. I remember this tactic being carefully employed in Romania. A Baptist pastor had enjoyed a fruitful ministry until after a few years he noticed that his congregation was no longer receptive to his preaching, and he agonized over this, prayed to the Lord, but nothing changed. Years later, after the fall of communism in the country, one of his elders asked to see him. The elder wept bitterly, and he confessed that he had been a member of the secret police all along. This elder had spread the rumor that the pastor was having an affair with a female choir member. There was not a shred of truth to it, but it was gossiped about the church until everyone knew, except the singer and the pastor, of course. His ministry was compromised. People thought he was a hypocrite and rejected his words. But how tragic that no one had the courage to speak to either him or the singer in question and clear the air. But how do we compromise the community and prevent the bonds of love and trust growing to make an attractive Christian gathering? One way I have noticed this being done is when someone, often a pastor but not always, someone proclaims that to be negative is to be anti-Christian. They outlaw conflict and label all criticism as unworthy. This compromises the community because then you force Christians to come to church and pretend. If they are not allowed to say or feel anything negative, the church cannot get better at what it does. Surely there are forms of conflict that are unhealthy, but not all conflict is. Jesus spent his ministry provoking positive conflict so that people could see through their delusions to the truth. If you outlaw conflict, you create a spurious, surface, brittle unity. And people then come to church and they can't be honest about their feelings. And a pretend culture compromises the community. After all, who wants to join a church where all you have to do is to pretend everything's fine? The final tactic persecutors use to kill the church is to support a suffocating structure. The idea here is to turn the church into a bureaucracy or surround the church with a host of administrative restrictions that prevent it doing its job. Take present-day Egypt. The government says to the Christians, "You are free to worship and do anything you want inside a Christian church. So far, so good. But here are the qualifiers. You can never get permission to repair your church. You can never get permission to build a new one. And when your church falls down, you have to get permission from the president himself to erect a new one, a procedure that takes 15 years. And if you get it, you must build the new one according to the exact same dimensions of the old one. It cannot get bigger." So Christians in Egypt are trapped by the size of their buildings. These are the four best ways to kill your local church without your church, or maybe even you, knowing it. The good news is that each of the tactics can be reversed, and they can become the four best ways to revive your local church. And this would be keeping the message pure, promoting empowering people, protecting the unity of the community, and supporting a loose, adaptable structure of church life that releases the gift of all the saints. The searing light of the persecuted church shows us how we might be killing our churches without us knowing it. Persecuted Christians say to us, "The church is only persecuted because it's doing something right. Make sure you are a church worth persecuting." That's another reason why we need them more than they need us.
There you have it, men. There are also four ways to revive your church. Number one, keeping the message pure. Number two, promoting and empowering people. Number three, protecting the unity of the community. Number four, supporting a loose and adaptable form of church life that releases the gifts of all the saints. Please work to revive, not destroy, your church. And remember to request your copy of the excellent PDF booklet, The Victorious Church and Family. Email us at menaliveuntogod@gmail.com. That's menaliveuntogod@gmail.com. Men Alive is a production of Go Teach Global. Visit our website at goteachglobal.com. Until next time, I'm your host, Paul Estabrooks, on behalf of Dr. Jim Cunningham, encouraging you to become Men Alive, transformed into the image of Jesus Christ.